Okay, here we go. Ready?
Yeah.
That's not bad.
That's what's up. Oh, yeah, I better. It says. Whoa. My phone's picking up. Oh, yeah. That's. No. Shh. No.
Hello.
That was.
So we've been doing some of the audio editing, so you can tell we got the intro back.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet. I totally didn't just play that on my phone into the microphone from a previous episode from back when we had an editor. That's not what just
that's
happened.
That was excellent.
See, diplomacy is a game about lying. Right now, I'm not lying to you guys.
With that, I think this is an opportune moment to thank our producer, our former producer, who's officially signed off into the sunset, Mr.
David Gregory.
Shut up. Yeah. David Gregory. I'm kidding. I know exactly what his name is. But it's funnier when I do it like that.
But he did
a lot for us, and as you might expect, his compensation was pretty meager.
Yeah. It was especially considering he didn't even play diplomacy. He just did this as like a learning experience for himself. We met him out of the blue and said, we can't pay you and we can't, you know, do you want to just do this? And he was always right there for us and pulled our shows together and taught us a lot about recording, which we have not used, as you can tell, because here we are playing stuff into my phone, or from my phone into the microphone.
I mean, what we're not telling you is basically we put him on meager rations, and right after we crossed the Platte River, he died of dysentery. But
Oregon Trail. Interesting.
Whenever I heard the word meager, that's what I think of. All my kids died because I put them on meager rations.
I think of that fording.
Oh, fording. Yeah, that's a good one, too. anyway, let's focus up.
This is episode 40.
It's a 4 and a 0. It's a 4 and a
Excuse
0.
Me.
Yeah.
Diplomacy cast.
It was so exciting that Eric is actually
choking.
He's choked up.
Yeah, I'm a little emo because, basically.
Episode 40.
We're over the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can see that we're slipping. You can tell just listening to this.
That's episode 41, friend.
Oh.
Episode 40 is the apex. It's the peak.
Oh.
Yeah.
Our show is thinking about buying a really nice sports car.
That's true.
Leaving its wife. Yeah.
It's going very on right true. Now. Which is why we're not having a guest this time.
Yeah, today's show is all about listener appreciation.
Yep.
It's all about you guys.
It's all about appreciation in general.
We asked for you guys to bring in a little bit as far as some topics, some show ideas, some things for us to chew on, and you really did, and we want to get through all of it.
Yeah. It's a lot, and I'm not being funny there. There's a lot of feedback. So
thank you.
We appreciate it.
It's pointing us in some new directions as we speak. Basically it's just us and you guys for today. We're going to get caught up on all that stuff that you've been sending us.
Yeah,
anything else?
And it'll be, building towards Diplomacy Cast 2.0. And that's going to be part of this. We're excited about it.
We're very much in 1.09 right now. We're about to make a move.
Absolutely.
Beta
testing. Sure, something. So this is Diplomacy Cast. If you wanted to reach us, you could reach us at
diplomacycast@gmail.com.
That's true.
Facebook.com/diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
At Diplomacy Cast on Twitter.
Yeah, and then I think you can find us on iTunes.
Yep. Be sure to subscribe. Be sure to leave us feedback. We don't ask for that much anymore, and we don't get much of it. And it would be cool.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Because, because that way when random people are just like, I wonder, and search the iTunes store, they don't always find, Middle Eastern diplomacy as discussed by, you might actually find us eventually if we get enough feedback.
Yep. So just tippy-tap signing up.
I'm Eric, he's Nathan.
I've been Nathan a long time.
Yeah, we didn't say that. We're going to take a break, and you can check out some of our awesome effects when we come back. And you'll know that it's the new segment somehow.
Clang, clang, clang.
Do-do-do! Do-do-do! The circuit!
It's the circuit. Hooray!
What do you think?
Ba-boo!
Is that pretty good?
bumper.
Yeah, we'll keep that one. We'll just put that in the file here. Just drag that.
Click, jump click.
That into
save.
Just log into. Yeah.
Oh, I guess this is the circuit.
This is the circuit. Yeah, we got one thing other than email to talk about that we got to get out. And I don't know if anybody was ever paying attention to our The Circuit segment before.
Yeah.
But it's...
We're going to be seeing a lot more of it.
Yeah, that's right. Because it's stuff that's going on in the world of diplomacy and specifically tournament diplomacy. This is a little tidbit of online news. I'm just going to read part of this post here.
Yeah. This is on Reddit, right?
This comes from Reddit. I'm going to kind of read it a little bit out of order. This was the final board of, what was the name of the tournament?
I think it was the World Cup.
Yeah, the Online Diplomacy World Cup. Not the 2015 World Cup.
No.
Not the 2014.
Nope.
2013?
Uh-huh. No. Keep going.
This was the final board of the 2012 World Cup. Why are we talking about that?
Yeah, I mean, that was the president. The last time we had a presidential election.
Yeah.
That's when this started.
This board took 3 years, 7 months, and 10 days to finish. It started on July 2nd, 2012, and ended on February 13th, 2016. The in-game years started in spring 1901.
That's weird. That's surprising.
Like they do. Ended in spring 2005. This is a thing. We're not making up.
I believe it, and I think it's a record, right? As far as anyone can tell.
As far as anyone knows, the longest other game went to 1964, according to this post.
And we're talking about recorded games, obviously.
Anyone.
I mean, it's possible that, you know, somebody...
Somebody in their house right now.
Sure, but...
Final supply center count. Italy, 13. Germany, 8. Austria, 8. Russia, 5. France, 0. Eliminated in 1948. Turkey, 0, eliminated in 1943. England, 0, eliminated in
1905.
So they got one guy out in 05. The next guy didn't go till 43.
I think... was the outcome? Who won?
Okay. The Italian topped the board and therefore won the tournament for his team, because it was a team scored thing. There was obviously no solo, but at 13, they had basically voted to concede to the Italian. The Russian on 5 was apparently the last holdout for the last 10 years or whatever. It's impossible to even wrap your head around.
So what you're telling me is there was actually a winner of this game that was England, and they got out in 1905.
That's correct. Yeah. I think France lost by the most because he was eliminated, but not until 1948.
Oh, my God.
There was a time, I believe, I'm just skimming here, there was a time where one of the other players was at 17, and I forget which one. I think maybe the German got to 17 at one point.
It might have been the Russian.
The Russian, maybe, who was down to 5 at the end. They rolled him all the way back.
Yeah.
I mean, there was several. I saw a chart. Just Google the Web Diplomacy World Cup 2012. If probably more of you knew about this than we did.
Yeah. It was a super interesting write-up. It's fascinating that a game could have gone on this long. And just thinking about it probably didn't take that much commitment on a day-to-day basis. But think about, you know, playing a single game for, you know, an entire presidential term.
I feel like these four guys, or probably six of the seven, except the poor English guy, like, they're like brothers now.
Yeah, you know, no, because like they spent 3 years in a trench in the French front.
I mean,
come on, that's insane.
According to some of the stuff that we read about it, they sort of invented their whole own language during this thing. They had just ways.
Yeah, like other people isolated on a space station. They evolved their own little language. That's crazy.
I can't even. Oh yeah, here it is. There's a game record showing the supply center trend thing that Web Diplomacy generates. and it goes back. It shows the exact board state.
For
web diplomacy.
For 105 years.
Yeah. 2012 World Cup Finals public press. Oh, that's right.
Other people were watching this.
No, there was no private messaging.
Yeah, it was Wilson.
Like, all negotiations were in front of everyone. I can't imagine anybody
having the patience to continue playing.
I don't even have anything intelligent or analytical to say about this. I feel like we're just reporting the news.
Exactly. It's like, man, you guys judge. Because, I mean,
if anyone out there knows any of the four players that finished this game and can put us in touch with them, I
would like to just pick their brains about, like, what...
I want to give them all a hug. I'm sure they're in therapy of some sort. Yeah, for real. Like, I want to buy them, yeah.
So, guys...
A bottle of
guys
scotchies.
Guys and gals, go out there, figure out, like, do a little Googling. You'll find it. It's fascinating to look at. It's a marvel. It's like one of those things in the Guinness Book of World Records. The world's tallest this, the biggest pizza ever made. Like, this is what this is. You should check it out.
I guess the thing is, like, we talked about, like, I remember on the show, we got on the subject of, like, the grind, the emotional toll. It was, all around the Grantland article from David Hill.
Right.
And then we talked to him about it, just, like, sort of the, like, the torture part of diplomacy, like the part of it where you're just like, it feels like such a slog, you know, like, or the thing I always reference, Jerry Fast, who always goes, we do this for fun, you know, like in moments in the game, and you're like, oh God, yeah, it's like, it's so, like, I'm thinking of the equivalent of playing a face-to-face game that lasts until 2005. Like, you'd have to go, like, to the hospital afterwards. It would take, I mean, for one thing, that would be a 6-day game.
Yeah.
Something like that, like, not counting, I mean, if you didn't sleep, you'd be playing for...
It's an impossible game.
I can't even wrap my head around it.
It's an impossible game.
Even the try-hardness of playing an online... At some point, it has
you're
to,
getting
like,
emotional.
I need a minute. Getting, I need a minute. Hold on.
This is traumatizing you, and all we've really done is read an article about it.
Yeah.
you gotta distance yourself a little bit. You didn't experience this.
I'm okay.
Yeah,
I'm all right.
Okay.
All right. I'm centered. I'm in my happy place.
Good. So if people know about this, if people know the folks and can get us in touch, I'd appreciate it. Just point them to the Facebook or our email or something. So we can figure it out. It'd be great.
Diplomacy's stupid.
Yeah.
We're going to take another break, and then it's time for whatever you want to call a segment about email.
It's about you.
Hot off the press.
Yeah, that's still under debate. This just in. This is Hot Off the Press.
You are listening to Hot Off the Press. That's a keeper, too.
Keep it.
No question.
Locked and loaded.
Yeah, got it. Nailed another one. I wanted to mention earlier, before we get into all these, that while we've downgraded substantially in the production and editing department, we have upgraded substantially in our studio space.
That's
true. Enjoy the nice new acoustics here.
Yes.
We are doing it somewhere without cats. Or babies.
Or, yeah.
Or
street noise.
Or street noise. Or anything. So
yeah.
I hope you enjoy our sound quality.
Yeah. It was a trade. It's worth the cash, though.
Yeah. I'd say so.
Apparently, we bartered a sound editor to get this. We were trading in humans.
might have been my immortal soul, also. I'm not sure. Not really sure.
Worth it for you guys. Each and every one of you.
Totally.
We love you guys.
Okay. Hot off the press. Email, Facebook. I'm just going to throw it all out there in kind of summary form, and we'll see where this takes us.
Great.
Andrew Catcher has started a hobby in Connecticut, and we are... Yep.
Andrew.
We are the people that always shout it out when somebody's starting a new hobby and a new meetup and a new this and a new
that. If it was possible for me to light off some sort of diplomacy signal or like fireworks that could be seen across the country.
Totally.
If I could like on a full moon, like put a symbol on it.
Ba-boom,
I would
ba-boom.
Do that because
that's
it's a good idea. It's exciting.
It is good.
It's exciting. It's a tough. If you listen to the podcasts, it's a tough thing to do, and you'll hear me say this a thousand times.
A game, Andrew. Keep us posted on how it's going. Meetup.com/Connecticut-diplomacy. It looks all swanky. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, you should.
It's got a picture of a guy with a hat and another guy with a beard, and they look legit.
By the way, please don't hire Eric to.
Yeah.
To explain how great your stuff is.
Yeah.
Because he just lists what he sees.
Recent photos. Really not a crafter. No. There's like 5 pictures of boards and flags, and then the guy from the.
You're not helping.
The
picture. Not helping.
But most interesting man in the world. I don't always tell lies, but when I do, I add in some truths to be safe.
Yes.
There you go.
No, it's.
I went above and beyond.
It's a legit thing, guys. If you're out there in what specific city in Connecticut is it?
Come on, Connecticut.
Did I say Connecticut?
Matter?
Yeah, it does matter. Are you kidding?
Okay. It doesn't even say. It doesn't matter. It's Connecticut. It's tiny. Oh, New Haven. There we go.
New Haven.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's tiny. Have you been to Connecticut? It's tiny.
So if you're anywhere near New Haven, if you're anywhere in New England. Check out what Andrew's doing. Try to get a game together. It's like I said, it's a hard thing to do. And any
start
support,
a hobby, get a shout out on the
guys
show.
In DC.
That's our rule.
Guys in DC, if you can make it up there, connect with Andrew. It'd be great. Please use our space on Facebook to connect.
Yes.
If you want to.
Yes. You always get airtime.
Yeah.
When you do this, let us know if you actually get games, please.
Yeah, we will, and we will talk about them. It'd be good.
Okay.
What else we got?
I love this one. Friend of the show, Zach Jarvie.
I love Zach.
Zach's
the best.
A man. He's always right there with the like, no wait, you guys can talk about this for 10 minutes and it'll be pretty good.
Yeah, and he's down there and he's doing the good work down there in Southern California.
Yep.
He's working away at it.
Yep. He says, on the question of who do you tell what in terms of the deals that you're making? For example, the Galatia bounce in 1901. And this is such a great question about like early game, because this is something that kicks my butt when people do it to me in a diplomacy game. Because
let's define it. Let's scope out the question first, and then I'm not
good
so that for our listeners.
Take it.
So what Zach's asking, and it might be clear to some of you, but I want to make sure before we start talking about it for a few minutes, everyone's on the same page. You know, in a 7-player game, when you want to do something like a bounce in Galatia, you don't particularly necessarily want Russia to know about it. So which players do you tell you're going to do that? Do you tell Russia?
Or
no. Do you tell Turkey? Maybe. Do you tell this person? And like, what is your thought process behind how you dole out information?
Right.
And that's the topic here.
Or even the arranged thing. Like, I'm Austria, you're Russia. Hey, let's just bounce in Galatia. And then the first thing that happens when the Turk pulls you off the board is what's going on in Galatia? And you're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
Sure. It's that, just when do you tell people about the deals you're making?
Yeah.
If at all.
I always think about Eddie Bersong when I think about this particular question, because he is the champion of like asking these seemingly bizarre, meaningless questions in just sort of a conversational tone in 1901, and then he's just played the game so many times that he knows exactly, like, you know, like you're England and he's Turkey, and he's like, hey, let me talk to you for like 1 minute, but before the deadline. Yeah, sure, why not? I talk to everybody. And then he just grills you. And he's like, sir, are you going to the channel? No? Okay. Who gets Belgium? Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it. And it just all goes into his matrix. And at the end of it, he's just like, that guy just told me everything I need to know to make up my own mind about what I'm going to do on my side of the board and like do better in this game. And it seems so like you just answer because you don't even know what he's asking when you're newer at the game. And you know, and part of it is he's asking because, like, he's a tactical genius who's played the game 20 zillion times, and the other part of it is that, like, he's kind of trying to suss out you. And he wants to know
how you're going to answer.
If you get evasive, and does that mean that you're really doing Western Triple and blah, 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 blah. So.
But it's you know, when I initially saw Zach's thing come in, what I was struck by was the number of times I found myself in that particular situation where it's not necessarily 1901, but at this point in things, there was a time when it happened in 1901, but it actually is a little bit later in the game where it happens more often, where you're trying to do something that's fairly complex, has a lot of moving parts.
Yep.
And that more than other portions of the game, your element of surprise or your element of being able to outguess the other side heightens importance. So, you know, I think about those situations like, oh, wow, and there's so many times where I've played it wrong, and, you know, it's taken a long time to get to the point where my general rule of thumb is not to say anything ever.
Right.
And just say the least amount possible that you can get away with.
Mm-hmm.
That seems sort of like obvious in some ways, but it's A, surprisingly difficult to do.
Yep.
And B, it's where I've come to after I've tried. I started there, went to more of a trying to dole out information to play people off each other.
That's right.
And have gotten back to that does not work as well as playing a little closer to the vest.
But it can also, you know, it can be annoying. It can set somebody against you. Like, I'm just thinking at the beginning of a game. It can be super annoying if you just go, you know, you're Russia and you're talking to Austria. And you're like, so what's your plan? They're like, I'm just going to try and get my neutrals, see what happens. I'm not doing anything.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
not recommending that.
Yeah. Like, when I'm looking for an ally, I'm looking for somebody who gives me a little bit of information that they don't have to.
Right.
Because that tells me that person's at least a little bit interested in, like, having a plan with me that lasts more than one season. You know, like, if they just say, I'm not going to Galatia, let's talk later. To me, that's like, let's bounce in Galatia. Let's talk later.
Well,
that's not an ally to me.
Okay, let's divide this up into 1901 conversation and later game, mid game conversation.
Yeah, well,
because I think they're very different things.
You're right.
I totally agree with what you're saying.
You're right.
I absolutely agree. The hemming and hawing and the non decisiveness.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to earn if you're trying to make allies and friends. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And so you're just going to have to trust, or you're going to have to just lie blatantly.
That's
right. And let the chips fall where they may.
That's
right. Sometimes a great strategy when you don't know anybody is to pick something that you want to do and then just lie to everybody about it and let the chips fall and then go with the thing that worked.
Don't listen to a word Nathan just said.
I mean,
that's a ridiculous strategy.
What are you talking about? No, it's not.
Lie to everybody but one person, I hope.
Yes,
so,
of course.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I didn't mean for it to sound like that. But I'm just saying, let's go to the Glacier Bounce. That's our center of this conversation.
Okay, sure.
If you want to do the Glacier Bounce, and Turkey and Italy have come to you and said, "What are you doing in there?"
And you tell all three of them, "I'm not going to Galatia." Then you go to Galatia. You're having a good game for sure. Sorry.
No.
Your point.
Fine.
Your point.
What I'm saying, and I don't think it's ludicrous, if you don't know anybody and you don't have any friends, sometimes it's just fine to keep it all to yourself and lie.
Yep.
You know, that's all right. We can do that.
No, absolutely. And sticking with 1901 for a second, I'm just going to respond to one thing there. So what I kind of like to do opening up is I kind of like to go to all my neighbors and kind of try and talk out a plan and see who perks up.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like one plan per person. Like
Is it the same plan?
No, it's a plan that benefits them
for
everyone. So I'm Austria again here.
Sure.
So I go to Italy. Okay, well, we could do a You know, we could do a key Lepanto. We could do a, like, you do the Lepanto and we work together and take out Turkey. We could get Russia involved. See how the Italian feels about it. If the Italian's
Sure.
like, eh, I'm just gonna hold in Venice, wait and see. Then I'm like, all right, that guy's not really on board for anything. I go to the Russian. Okay, well, we could, you know, we could leave Galicia empty and just go south. But what do you think about it? Yeah, okay, that's kind of cool. Then what would happen in 1902? You know, then I've got a person where I feel like I can start giving them a little bit of information because they're like their interest is piqued a
Sure.
little bit. You go to the Turk, you know, like, well, we, you know, if you get to Black Sea and Armenia, we could take out the Russian military. Oh yeah, and then I could support you into Romania in the fall. Yeah. Then you start getting an idea. Like, if you get at least one bite, you know, if you get at least one person who's like, ooh, okay. Let's do this, and is willing to sort of be open about what it is that they're going to do next, then you've got an opportunity. And the opportunity can be you've got an ally, or the opportunity is that you can be like, oh, I know exactly what this guy's going to do, and I'm going to do the counter thing and totally screw up their early game. But like, I kind of like to do a couple of laps around in the early game, if like pre-01, if I have the chance, where I'm kind of trying to figure, like, I'm cagey on the first lap.
Sure.
I don't try and tell anyone exactly what I'm going to do because I honestly don't know. And then if I find somebody who like seems like they have a plan or like one of my plans, then I start to know where to leak the information a little bit. And that's just sort of a feel thing, I guess, and I
So
probably
how
still
do you
get it
know when
wrong.
what like what's your did what does leaking the information look like? Are you basically when you say leaking the information, you're saying you decide that you're going to trust someone based on your good feels? Is that
Yeah,
basically what you're saying?
kind of. Like I'm Russia. The Turk doesn't want to bounce in the Black Sea.
Sure.
I might tell the Austrian at this point, yeah, we're going to bounce in the Black Sea, or so that he doesn't get spooked pre-O. You know what I mean? Like if the Turk is the one that I actually want to work with,
Sure.
like or else, he told me he's going to the Black Sea, so I have to get. Like at this point, you start to craft a lie. Based on what your actual plan is. And then when it comes, but I suppose the other question, I'll let you talk a little bit if you want to, on like the pre-01, what to tell to the other side of the board.
Oh, what do you mean? Like,
You know, like
are you talking about what I'm gonna do?
your Austria and France asks you, so what's up in the East?
Well, I can speak to that, but I just want to, and
Or do you have something
I'll
else
work
on
this in.
mind?
I just
Sure.
want to just, con I mean, Zach's question
Yeah.
is, who do you tell what when? And your answer was more. I like to figure out what people are gonna like. I like to get a feel for something, and then I make that decision, which I think is a perfectly
Pre-spring
valid.
I want, yeah. Right.
And I think, and there's nothing particularly wrong with that approach.
Right.
I don't think it answers this question,
Okay.
but I don't
Whatever,
know.
he's just some listener.
But I think the better way of I think what he's trying to ask is there a particular strategy for disseminating information as a weapon?
Yes. Yeah. You're right.
And
There's lots of them.
there's lots of them.
Yeah.
And I think I do exactly what you do in 01, which maybe is why we get the tournament results that we get,
Right. Even when
because
I was good, I used to do the
yeah.
thing that
Oh,
I
that's
just
true.
said. Kind of make a
No,
couple laps.
so
It's
but
just that
at
people liked my ideas back then. That was the
Yeah,
difference.
they were new and fresh.
Yeah.
And that's where I think you were like giving me the opening with what do you tell the other side?
Yeah.
So if your question is as I am interpreting it, Zach, that how do you use information as a weapon,
Yeah.
more as the sword than the shield, I think you need to know you need to do the lap that Eric is talking about at least enough to get kind of just a temperature check of the temperament of people,
Right.
and kind of get a gauge of their level of experience a little bit,
Sure. Yeah, that's
because
right. Every once in a while, it'll be a stranger and it'll just be like, I'm Turkey and I get Greece in 01 no matter what. And you're like, okay, that's just gonna
you
change
want
everything.
you want to do a temperature check first, because anything that we're saying, as I mean, this should be the big caveat to every piece of advice that we give is like it's totally dependent on the players and like how things are going.
Right.
But in broadly speaking, if you're getting people, if you get the people that seem, you know, middle of the road, regularly experienced, mm-hmm. not like hyper level world champion sharks, and not this is my third game in diplomacy. If you get those people, you want to be judicious in how you throw around information. What you don't want to do is something that I see a lot of players do, and I feel like when they do this, it's very, very transparent.
Mm-hmm.
The whole, I talked to England, and he's totally going to the channel. Absolutely happening.
Oh.
100%. You need to go for that.
Yeah.
Like,
I always fall for that.
I find if you're going to walk up to people, Zach, and go, this move has happened, just like out of whole cloth, like, oh, I talked to a Turk, and he's definitely moving to Armenia and the Black Sea. Yep. You need to do something about that.
I think I always fall for that because I just don't have the balls to try it ever. Just be like, holy crap, dude.
Oh, this is happening. Why would you say that if it wasn't true?
Yeah.
There is a whole brand of player that does this.
Yeah.
Just
a total chaos.
In my humble experience,
mm-hmm.
it has never happened
mm-hmm.
that the person that came up to me that wasn't – it's always somebody that isn't a neighbor that you haven't mm-hmm. talked to before. It's always like somebody who's like a neighbor removed who's like, here's the skinny. I just heard this.
Yeah.
Seriously, don't fall for that. And don't, as a weapon, Zach, do this. Because it – Unless you're talking to Eric Mead, apparently.
Yeah, right.
No one really falls for it, and it just annoys people.
Well, yeah, and another thing is, I suppose, I don't do it completely out of whole cloth, but you can, I suppose, get a little bit of my, like, England, France, Germany.
Okay.
You know, you're England, I'm France, and Zach is Germany, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happens that you and I talk first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And we kind of talk through, well, what would it be like if we were to go attack Zach right now?
Sure.
Right? And we kind of brainstorm some ideas. Then let's say you and Zach go talk next. And I don't know what you guys talked about or whatever. Then Zach comes to me third. Like, you do the whole rounds. And Zach comes to me and says, well, I talked to Nathan. How did that go? I'll say, we talked about a DMZ here, and we're not really sure who gets Belgium and blah, 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 blah. He might be into a Western triple, and I might say, oh, really? Because, you know, Nathan proposed to me something where I go to Burgundy and we take you down, you know, because you actually probably did
propose that
because you were kind of feeling me out and trying to decide who your ally was. Every once in a while with a certain kind of player, I'm not saying you, Zach, but every once in a while with a certain kind of player, you can, like, sow a little bit of distrust just by, like, actually telling the truth about that first conversation that you had where you were like, well, we were talking about how to take you apart, but just kind of make it seem like it was more the other guy's idea than yours. Like, he seems to want to do this. Ooh, really? You know, like, you can do a little bit of that without having to do the whole hog, oh, my God, he's coming right now.
Right.
You know?
That's completely... just supports what I'm saying. That is the perfect way to do what the players who come up and say, like, they're coming for you.
Yeah, right.
That, like, that's the way you're describing, that's the way to do it.
Yeah. Don't tell them that, have a grain of truth. Quote them. Misquote them, but quote them.
Yeah.
You know?
Take it out of context. Really, that's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's first of all, and the reason for this is
mm-hmm.
that person is going to immediately go... That player is going to immediately go and go, like, what are you talking about this? Why are you telling Zach that I said this?
Yeah.
Eric,
mm-hmm.
indignant that you're sowing this distrust between my perhaps soon-to-be ally, Zach, and what are you doing? Like, there's no – when you're blatant like that, that just blows up in your face.
Yep. So Absolutely.
You're better off using information with a little bit of truth.
And by the way, on the flip side of that, if instead – the conversation, I went to Zach in that same example, and I said, well, what'd Nathan say? And he reports the exact same thing that Nathan actually said to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of useful, too,
mm-hmm.
because at that point, you're like, that's actually probably what Nathan's going to do.
Yeah.
Like, and now we know that. And so,
Can we exploit this?
Right, exactly. Can we exploit this, or at least can we not worry about this and do something else instead?
Right.
Like, you know, at this point we might go, oh, I actually think Nathan wants a Western triple. He said Western triple to me. He said Western triple to you. I think maybe he wants a Western triple. So should we do that, or should we do something else? You know what I mean? Like, so at that point you have some corroborating.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't really talk about the, like, what to tell Eddie Bresson when he's like, who gets Belgium? Part of it.
Oh, well, I guess that's another layer of this.
Yeah.
And we'll wrap this up here.
Whatever. A lot more. We got nothing else to do. It's fine.
Well, this is just a piece of advice that sort of like answers the inverse of Zach's question.
Yeah.
When people are coming to you to data mine,
mm-hmm.
you need to understand that every question posed to you, there's probably a reason for it.
Right. Even if you don't understand the reason for it.
Exactly.
You can just... Yeah. I don't really know what to tell people when somebody's data mining you and you don't understand their reasoning, but you know that there's something to it. It's tough because you don't want to lie. Because why just, like, kick somebody in the shin when they don't even have anything? Like, if you're Austria and they're France, you actually might, like, have a useful gossiping relationship with them.
Right.
Like, if it's... I guess maybe the answer is tell them but ask for something in return.
Oh, that's a good...
Might not be a bad idea. Like, well, okay, I'll tell you, but I'm really curious about, you know, what if Russia's going to open north or something like that. Can you? And sometimes you can be like, can you find out for me?
Right.
We didn't talk about that. Well, could you ask it? You know, and then at that point you're like, oh, hold on, maybe I'm spying for you and you're spying for me, and we have something where we can go back to each other a couple of times, and then you have a friend on the other side of the board. That guy's never ready for something.
Yeah, and I think, they're asking for a reason. So mm-hmm. if you don't know the reason,
and you don't think they're going to help you, and
you just don't have, you just feel like they're just mining you for information, just be a little coy.
Not sure yet, and then look over their shoulder and be like, ooh, Russia, I got to talk to you.
Right. Just,
you know what I mean?
Or,
yeah.
And I think you just have to let the circumstances go. Like,
right.
There are sometimes people are data mining because it's clear. They have their pen on their pad, and they just need to know an answer.
Yeah.
There could be those situations in which it's fun to be evasive, and sometimes it's fun to be like, well, this is what I think they said.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that's completely not what they said, and the likeliness is it's going to screw up their orders. You know, you just got to play those ones by ear. That's kind of the problem. The only problem with Zach's question is, like, we can go a million places with a million different scenarios.
And we were dividing this up into the pre-spring 01 and then everything else, and we haven't even gotten to the end.
Well, that's
what
I was just going to segue.
Let's go.
That.
Everything
that's
else.
You.
Here we go.
I already talked about the everything.
Well, so the one thing that sort of
popped out in my
mind.
I'm thinking stalemate lines, by the way, when I say everything else. It's kind of what was in my head.
I was thinking stabs.
Okay, great.
Like, what happens when you're about to stab your ally and you've got a guy who's trying to convince you to stab your ally right mm-hmm. now?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
the
this
guy
one
who's, the guy, yeah, you mean the guy who's like, you need to stab this guy right now or I'm just going to be locked in.
You can take Belgium, you can take
And
Holland,
I'll do it too. And I'll do it too.
No, not even I'll do it too.
Oh, not
just,
even I'll do
just
it too.
Just like... I just want you to know that you have this great stab. Instead of attacking me right now, you could be taking Belgium and Holland off of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that screws me up a lot. Am I just like, or am I like, yeah, I'm doing that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, whether he was the one who pointed it out or whether you discovered it on your own and were planning on doing it anyway, there's that season where somebody was trying to convince.
I think you almost never do that.
What if you need him?
Well, that's what I was suggesting right
yeah,
there.
Now
yeah.
I'm changing it.
Yeah, no, if you need them,
keeping
that,
you on your toes.
That, if you need them, that is where there's a whole ball of wax. Mm. You're just like, oh my God. Because
that's why this game's hard. That's why playing it for 105 years isn't very fun.
Well, there's also the question of like when. That's the kind of thing that I always try and wait mm-hmm. until there's like a minute and a half left.
Right. That's
or,
part of
and
it.
I mean like... What I'll usually do to set that up is, I might say, I'm considering it, and I might
looking
I'm looking at it, and I might do that for more than one season. Especially, you know those situations in which...
And then you finally make up your mind a minute and a half before the clock, and you're just like, dude, I gotta talk to you right now.
No, I'm usually...
I mean, as long as your stabby isn't watching.
Right. I usually don't want to do it in situations in which I have to do a lot of coordination with the other player. If it's really, if there's a lot of coordination that has to happen, I can't sit down and talk to that other player. There's no way my ally is not going to go, huh, why is Nathan talking really a long time to this guy? It needs to be something where
Playing online.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But it needs to be something in face-to-face land where I could just look and maybe give a nod or maybe give it's a go. Those are the situations I'll do. If I need it so badly that I can't make a decent stab without
his help,
without some specific support that isn't just really obvious, it's probably not a good stab.
No, probably not. And I guess there's like one sort of power move where you can kind of just sidle up to the guy 60 seconds before the deadline. He spent the whole first half of the season trying to convince you to do a stab. You spent the second half of the season convincing your ally that you weren't going to do that stab, and then you decided to do that stab. You can kind of, like, your ally's distracted doing something else. You kind of sidle up to the other guy and just go, okay, so you're supporting me into Belgium? Okay. And then just write something.
Yeah.
On a piece of paper. At that point, he probably believes you.
Yeah.
Because you're like, okay, I've made up my mind and I'm committing, and the other guy isn't looking.
Absolutely.
Right now. So you can do that, but that is always going to be a feel thing.
Yeah.
Like but that's a really good point about, like, if you need it,
yeah, you
it might not be that good of a
You
stab.
Shouldn't be doing it.
Because what you don't want to do, obviously, is you don't want to be like, okay, yes, you've convinced me I'm going to do the stab, and then have that guy get up and go to the guy you're stabbing and be like, hey, guess what I just heard? Because that tanks
the
your
game. Whole point of that tactic is to break up your alliance.
Yep.
That's the whole reason that guy is hammering away.
Yep.
That guy has no interest in you going up by two or three.
That's right.
He has zero interest in that. There's no reason for him to want that.
Exactly.
He's just trying to get the pressure off of himself, and anything that he can do or she can do to, like, to do that, to aim you at somebody else is what they're going to do.
That's very well said.
So don't don't give them the chance to go to the other person, because they absolutely will.
You're going up by three. Yeah, right.
I mean,
I'm not going down by three. I mean, yeah.
The best possible outcome for that player is to have your ally defend your stab, destroy the alliance, and
also
maybe make
nobody
gains.
Grows. Yeah, exactly.
Or your opponent on the other side of the line that you want to turncoat to grows.
That's right.
That's the worst.
That's
where you plan a stab, and you are like, okay, we got it, and the only person that gains is the guy that convinced you to flip.
Mm-hmm.
The worst.
One last thing to add, I guess, is that it can just be, I'm thinking back to some online games that I've played over some time, it can be really clutch to have somebody on the other side of the board that's your buddy, like, from the beginning. Sometimes you don't have time in a face-to-face game, which is why I say it's more of an online thing. Sometimes it can work in face-to-face, too. It's just that there's so much going on in face-to-face, and like, the deadlines are so short, and, like, people switch from your buddy to your, like, they want something from you so fast, and you don't have time to think about it. But, like, in an online game, like, just finding somebody and, like, making a gossip pact pre-spring 1901. Just, like, I'm Austria, you're France. We don't really want any of the same stuff. We're a little interested in what Italy's up to, what Germany's up to. We're interested in what everybody's up to. How about I just always tell you the truth, and you just always tell me the truth, and we'll meet in 1906. We'll have pieces adjacent to each other, and we'll have had all this time where we've just been leaking stuff back and forth about what we know about the game. That can be amazing. Like,
it sounds decent.
Don't underestimate, like, if you have time. For whatever reason, either you're playing online or the game's super boring otherwise, and you're playing face-to-face, if you have time, make a gossip partner on the other side where you're just like, I'm just going to tell you everything I know, and you're just going to tell me everything you know, and like, it can break a game open. It really can. I've had that a few times in online games, and then amazing things happen, like later in the game. Like, you both just do so well in that game, just for like being constant leaks to one another. So anyway,
well, that's a goal.
Yeah,
I gotta try to do that in face to face sometime.
Yeah. It's so hard face to face.
Yeah.
It's just like even if it's like, you know, if it's like Matt Shields or somebody you and I have played a million times and like, you know, that they're
there's
usually
just no time.
Like,
I know
like
just no time.
Honest with you, you know, Matt's France and you're Austria and you're like, hey, Matt, hey, what's going on? And he'll tell you. And then you'll want to tell him because he's Matt Shields and you played with him a million times and he's, you know, like you've had good alliances with him and this and that. But then just all of a sudden, he'll need something, and
yeah.
Something will change. He'll be like, okay, so we've got this. You need to attack Italy right now.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, but this guy's my buddy. Wait, do I need to attack Italy right? Oh, no! And then all of a sudden, like, your head explodes. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's hard to do in face-to-face. But, okay.
Thanks, Zach. That was really
yeah,
good.
Yeah. See, good. You see how easy it is, other listeners?
Don't make Zach shoulder the entire burden here.
That's right.
No, we got.
We talked for like 30 minutes on that
no,
one.
No, because
on
it's
a one sentence question, basically.
But, you know, at least you got to tell me I had a terrible, terrible approach. That was good.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked that part. I'm glad that's what you remember about that 30 minute conversation is the part at the very beginning where you didn't make sense for a second. I called you on it. All right.
just because I was completely not lucid at all doesn't mean. What else we got in the mailbag? Oh,
all right.
Let me just get into the mailbag here. Here it is. All right.
Done.
What's our next?
From Lebanon, Pennsylvania.
Great.
Next up, we got. Oh, Alex Maslow. That's who we got.
Oh, Alex.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, Alex
Friend
Maslow.
Of the show, Alex Maslow. Alex has suggestions. He's actually trying to make our show better for us. We're just going
to
love some of them and eviscerate some of them in public.
Let's do it.
Right. Alex can take it.
Yeah.
Our favorite one is actually his first one. Recruit tournament reporters who go to a tournament, take notes, talk to people, and report back on the show.
I think this is a great idea.
So good.
I love
it. I don't know
idea.
Why we didn't think of this before, because we don't go to every tournament. In fact, we go to very few freaking tournaments.
At the moment, yeah.
And all we would need is some volunteer to just sort of let us know what happened at the tournament. It doesn't have to be the one who won.
Yeah.
We try and have, like, winners on every once in a while, but it doesn't have to be that. Like, I'd rather, like, have a person at the tournament, and so we're going to start doing this basically effective immediately.
Yeah.
Like I'm not sure what the next tournament is, which is how out of touch we are right now. But there's stuff coming up.
Yeah.
And like we're going to find somebody that's going to call in and tell us what happened at this
yeah.
tournament. So
it's
probably Alex Maslow. Because I think
no, and this is
them.
A great idea. And that could it could take the form of. Somebody calling in from the tournament midway through. We might have a guest on. We might do a variety of things, in which you know we'll have somebody write something up and then read that or paraphrase that.
Yeah.
So, but this is a really good idea. We don't just want to get the tournament winners' perspective.
Yeah.
We'd like the perspective of people that are just in it. Like it's way better in the moment.
Yeah.
So we try it.
Right.
That
3 days after it or something.
Yeah.
It would be great. So okay.
Great idea, Alex.
We're doing that one. The rest of them are good, too. No, really. he had an idea of just having, like, a segment where we do point-counterpoint.
Yeah.
We feel like we do that anyway
all
the time.
I mean, maybe we don't have enough counterpoint.
Yeah.
Because we tend to... Because
we're right, both of us, all the time.
Yeah.
Except where we're not.
Except when we're not. I mean, I suppose...
It's not a bad idea in terms of, like, if there's something, like... If there's a controversy... Like, if you, the listener, can give us, like, one thing that you know diplomacy players disagree about. Like, you know, or like, a one sentence. Something that diplomacy players disagree about. Like, here's an example. If your neighbors are a really good player and a really bad player, you should target the really good player.
Right.
And there's then, something that diplomacy players disagree about a lot versus and then one of us target the really bad player.
One of us will just take a side, even though that's not what we particularly believe.
Or if you send us enough of those, we'll find one where we do disagree.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
That could be a subject. Yeah. So it's not hopeless.
Yeah,
it's that's something we could do something with. If anybody feels inspired by this and wants to make a list of 20 of these that have been in their heads, that you're like, wait a minute, I've been trying to learn to play diplomacy better, and this guy says always do this, and this guy says never do this, and it's been bugging you. Let us know about that one.
Yeah, and then we'll talky-talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. He says, do more like episode 34 little segments. Are you mad? That almost killed me. I almost died trying to get 34 different people to interview. But if the idea is to do like mini segments on mini subjects, such as a single supply center.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing. That's a thing. I think Alex just wants to do that because he was one of the 34.
Right. He really enjoyed episode 34. And
he was in it. Why would he not?
He was in it for a minute or two of the 2 hours.
I'm going to say Portugal. I feel like it was Portugal.
I mean, it could be something where we do, someone's going to Barcelona, so we're going to...
That's me, actually.
It's so weird.
Weird that you brought that up.
So weird that I brought that up. Thanks for ruining it.
Mm.
You really got ahead of the joke there.
Oh.
Anyway, you could do a segment on, I don't know, that. Somebody.
This got so uncomfortable.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, oh, you went to Barcelona.
Here's the 5 minute. Somewhere on the diplomacy. I'm going to Spain South Coast. Yeah. That's actually, like, I literally, like, we've been looking at this tour book. And I keep telling my girlfriend, like, this is exactly like diplomacy. The North Coast is a total drag, and we don't really want to go there. We're going to spend all of our time on the South Coast, because that's where everything good is.
Yeah.
do a variant episode is his final suggestion.
You know what? We've been thinking a lot about
Stay
that.
Stay tuned.
And I think that's coming soon.
Yeah.
We've
been joking about this almost for, like, forever.
Yeah.
Now, but
it is coming very soon, maybe even the next episode.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Stay tuned. That's it. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Moving on.
And you should feel free to send us more.
Yeah. This one has me kind of fired up. Thomas Cook.
Yeah.
What percent of success in diplomacy is due to tactics/diplomacy/other factors? I don't know if we've ever talked about that. That's one of those point counterpoint things reasonable people disagree about. Kind of a question.
To understand his question, is he basically saying, like, yeah, is it, you know, 90% inspiration and 10% perspiration?
Sort of. I think. And he put a slash other factors too, so we don't have to limit it to tactics/diplomacy if we want to throw something else.
So if we wanted
to
portion out by percentage success in diplomacy, how would we portion it out?
Right.
Okay.
I think that's a
good
one.
You're fired up. Why don't you start? That'll give me time to think about.
Okay.
Think about my answer.
And it's just because, like, I feel like when I'm trying to explain this game to somebody that's never played diplomacy before, they're like, "So is it a strategy game?" Well, yes, but no. It's a strategy game. Yes, and the tactics matter. Yes. Have I ever kicked the ass of somebody who's way better at tactics than me? Yes. Quite often. In fact,
I would say almost always.
Almost always. I can point to times where, yeah, I feel like people that have perfect tactics but zero diplomacy are not going to win very many games. Right?
Yeah, no, that's
so true. I feel like the tactics number has to be something under 100% or under 50% of me. It has to be logically, like, your tactics need to be competent, right? Tactics are
there's
hopeless,
there's a floor that you have to be above. Like, there is some percentage that you must have to succeed.
You can be the most charming, charismatic person in the entire world, but if you don't know how to write an order, you still probably can't do great very often.
Yeah.
Unless you're just like, I'm so great, would you just write my orders for me and let me win? Like, that would be a lot of charm.
That'd be
right
a lot.
There.
That's
so
a lot of charm.
I'll go 35-65, somewhere in there. One-third tactics, two-thirds your ability to persuade people to do things, however you do that. And if you think, I guess if you think about like the elite players of the game, like the people that we've met that are like multiple tournament winners and have shown a huge track record of success, the thing that we talk about is rarely their tactics.
Oh, yeah.
Right? If we're having a conversation about how the best players in the world do it again and again, their tactics help, for sure. But what I really try and think about is, like, gosh, how does that person persuade people to do things again and again and again? So, yeah, that's sort of where
I'm at. So you're at 65-35.
Yeah, two-thirds, one-third, somewhere in there, yeah.
Mr. Cook. Mr. Cook.
Thomas Cook.
So I would, as an initial matter, I assume you're asking this question because you want to get better at this, the game of diplomacy, mm-hmm. and you're asking, okay, well, what should I focus on? Because I'm at a certain level now. I see that there's players that are better than me, and I'd like to emulate them.
Yeah.
If you're going to work on something, the first thing you need to work on is tactics.
Right.
You absolutely need to, that is a fundamental. It's just correct. Like you know, you need to know how to count to 10 before you can do any addition. So there's a certain minimum threshold that you have to have, as I've already said. That threshold's real low. It's not particularly, it doesn't take a talent. I have seen 15-year-old kids run tactical circles around people that have been doing this for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
You need to put in a little bit of time, and most of that is just playing the game.
Yeah.
And just seeing it get played out a number of times.
And there's so much, by the way, on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of, like, resources on improving your tactics.
And you should play games, read those, play some more games based on what you read, go back, do that cycle a number of times, spend a while doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll know when you get to the right place because it'll just feel boring. You'll be like, yeah, I know how to do this. Yeah, I know how to do this. Yeah, I know how to do this. And Eric has a nice 65-35 thing. I think it, unfortunately, is not that easy.
Yeah.
The first thing I would say is 10% at any given point in the game is just pure luck.
Oh, yeah.
There's 10% that is your other factor. It's at least 10%.
Good point.
There's just, you have no control over it, and that luck isn't necessarily good things. It could be someone, it could vary from anyone just having a bad day to someone having a digestional distress, someone being hungover, bad board draw, where people have placed. At least 10% that is just blah, blah, blah out there.
Do you remember that game that we played where it was like you and me and Jake had a terrible hangover and David Hood was on that board too and David Hood was dead by like 1903 and Jake almost soloed and Chris Martin was on that board too?
Yeah.
And these things happen. You're just like, whatever, like throw a bunch of names in the hat and something happens on
the
board. And
at least 10% of your field is just luck, fudge factor, life.
Yeah.
So just put that aside, and that's going to happen every single time. You have no control over that.
That's a good point.
The best you can do is try and identify it and to use it to your advantage, but 9 times out of 10, you don't get that.
Mm-hmm.
Your tactics in the first 2 years, probably, like, that's, they don't matter.
Yeah.
There's no tactical, as long as you have, this is assuming at this point, you've done the work to have that minimum.
You know what the openings are and are not. Like,
yeah.
If you
screw up the openings, it's devastating.
Yeah.
But we're assuming now you have enough tactical knowledge and enough competency that you're not going to do that.
If you're making up an opening, you better really know what you're
doing.
Yeah,
you better.
Yeah.
But assuming you kind of know the motions and you know how not to just destroy yourself, how not to implode, your tactics for the first 2 years, 2 or 3 years are probably irrelevant.
Yeah.
There are certain situations that won't apply to, but
right.
Tactics over... So in the beginning, I think Eric's largely right. It's 65-35. When you get... There's a point in the mid-game where it tips a little bit, and your tactics become much more important.
That's true. That's where I get my butt kicked sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
So as the game,
it's just like, oh God, I'm fighting this guy, and he's going to guess right every time, and I'm going to guess wrong every time because he knows that I know that you know that he knows.
Yeah.
That
his name is Dave Maletsky.
Yeah, and he's better than me.
So as you succeed, as you are successful,
right?
And it doesn't mean you have you're not the largest, but you're definitely not just being crushed.
Yep.
As the game lengthens and you continue to be viable and sort of a power broker, the tactics become increasingly important.
Yep.
So, and your diplomacy, frankly, becomes less important because there's really just not a lot of talking to be done, and it's pretty clear where you're going. And
barring the big stab.
Barring the big stab.
Everyone's
but that's
in a
not
while
really
like,
that's not that's some diplomacy.
Yeah.
But it's not really. That's more subterfuge.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say. I would focus. After you get your minimum bar of tactical knowledge, go out and learn the hard part and the more important part, which is the diplomacy aspect.
Yeah, and as for improving that, boy, I mean, it's hard for us to give advice about like that.
Yeah, I don't know how.
Maybe that's a whole episode sometime down the line about like it. Like, okay, I want to improve my 60%. Like, how do I get people to like me? Boy, it's not.
I've seen people go through this, and it takes a lot of hard conversations with yourself about what you have
to
figure out. What is it that people don't like? You literally have to ask people, why didn't you want to work with me? Then get past their initial answer, which is just polite.
Yep.
And say, no, really, you could be as mean as you want. I know I screwed this up. Mm-hmm. What am I doing wrong? Say anything you want. And then, and this is the key, don't actually get pissed off when they say, well, you're kind of rude and abrasive.
Right.
And
you
I
have
felt
bad
like
breath.
You, I felt like you really got in my face.
Sure.
And I was intimidated and I just really was uncomfortable.
I have.
You have to be like, oh, wow, I didn't mean to do that. That's really good advice. I wonder, you're going to get a lot of that. And it's tough because a lot of people aren't going to want to tell you that, and it's going to be hard for you to take it.
I have a friend who is quite shy that learned to really enjoy diplomacy because he realized that it's a time that he simply cannot be shy, and noticed that like the more assertive he was in games, the more success that he had in games, and started coming back to diplomacy for that reason.
Yeah.
Like, he started, you know, not... He didn't turn into like a full-timer, but he came to like a bunch of stuff because he was just like, this is a great assertiveness training for me. And that to me, that's really cool.
Yeah.
That's like, this game is helping me be a better person, or whatever. And also it's like, I can evaluate it based on my like results in the game. And that's interesting, right?
Yeah. But, and that's... And that's the other part of this. It's you know, you just got to go through the motions to get the data. There's no other way to get the data.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll know when it's working when you start porting your diplomacy skills into your everyday life.
Oh, God. Right.
That's when you know you're making progress because you're seeing success in the game and you start doing it at your job. You start doing it with awkward interactions with friends and family. Not obviously all the time manipulating them, but it's more navigating sometimes those situations in which there's tension.
You become more empathic, I think, if you really commit yourself to it. Like,
absolutely.
You start at like instinctively asking yourself, "What is this person trying to accomplish here?"
How can I move the pieces? How can I like get
it's
people
sort of,
to get along? How can I make the pieces line up?
Exactly.
It's not malicious and manipulation.
It's sort of like being an X-Man.
You know what? With that, I think we need to move on.
He had one more question.
Oh,
which should be shorter. He also wanted to, Thomas, that is, he also wanted to know, what is the biggest gripe of purists concerning online platforms of play?
I mean, it depends on what his question is.
I'm guessing he means face-to-face only players when he says purists.
No, what I mean by is he coming from a place where he thinks the objection is the platform?
Yeah,
like the particular
how I read
like
it.
Map.
I don't know.
Or does he saying like is this really just a question like, why don't face-to-face players like online play?
Yeah, and yeah, well, I think that probably every face-to-face player that I know that's at all serious about diplomacy has played at least a little online.
Oh no, there's no way. I think there's a life cycle of a diplomacy player where you have to.
Me personally, I just mostly stopped because of the time suck. Like, I'd rather, just because, like, of my own sort of obsessive about games personality, like,
yeah.
I'd rather just blow a whole weekend playing Diplomacy with my buddies and get to go drink afterwards than blow an hour a day, 365 days a year.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
it's just a way better use of time.
I don't have any gripe about online diplomacy. I think it's a different game, but I think it's a really interesting game that I wish, like, if I called in Rich to work one day and just stayed home, I'd probably play a lot of online diplomacy because, like, it'd just be like, oh, this is so satisfying. Like, it's so much fun to do. But I don't think that there's too many people that do have a gripe. I'd say that maybe some people think that it's like a little, gosh, if I had to say something bad about it, like that it's a little antiseptic or...
Yeah.
Like, too based in logic and analytics and less based in sort of emotion and just making eye contact and figuring out that this is your ally and this is your enemy, you know?
Well, yeah. I think to expand on that a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I early on in my diplomacy career, I played a ridiculous amount of online games. I was involved in half a dozen games at a time.
You did like four at a time, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I did a couple of different variants. I did, I did all sorts of different kinds of press. For a while, just to like sharpen my blade a little bit, I did pickup games where somebody would abandon a really crap position and I'd pick up that game just to see if I could rejuvenate the position. You know, 9 times out of 10, I would lose those last two centers, but you know, I got to try.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did all of that for a long time. And there's nothing wrong with that play. I did real time diplomacy, which was exciting.
Yeah.
I played against bots. It was excellent.
You just blew my mind.
I played against bots.
Okay.
It was intense. Because I really liked the game. I was really into it. But there came a point in which I decided and I was noticing I really got a kick out of playing face-to-face. And I realized why I was playing so much online is I was chasing that feeling.
Right.
And I wasn't getting it. And once I figured that out, what I really liked was the stuff you were talking about, being able to look somebody in the eye, being able to sort of use interpersonal skills, use the diplomacy tactic. I was getting satisfaction out of being good at that. My measurement of success wasn't how many centers I had, but my read of the board. Even when I got crushed, if I knew I was getting crushed because I read people right, I was getting satisfaction out of that.
Yep.
So.
And then you went to work the next week, and like an X-Man, you were like, I have more power.
Exactly.
Now. Right.
So that whole situation led to the point that I just stopped playing online because it was like, oh, I'm not getting, this isn't a good use of my time. I really want to be doing this other thing.
Yep.
So I guess to answer his question, that's why. Like there's.
But we're not purists.
We're not purists at all. I mean, I absolutely think any good diplomacy player should be playing. You need to log the time in the online world because that's the best place to get those tactics I was just talking about.
Yeah, and pretty much any of the best players will tell you that. Like, in fact, a lot of them will tell you, like, go play no press.
Yeah, go to the salt mines, man.
Which I think
that's where you need to go. I played a ton.
Talk about another time. I played like one game ever, and I was miserable the entire time. Like, I don't understand no press, but like most of the really good players will tell you go play no press, which is madness. But to me, but to most people, it's like a good way to practice tactics. Anyway, so I don't think there is as much of that as you think. I can't think of anyone that I would call a purist in that way.
And I guess the other side of this coin,
mm-hmm.
but I haven't met anybody who's like, oh, I won't play online. It's terrible. The other side of that coin is there's certainly people that will complain or just
right that the face to face game is like too sloppy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's people like there's definitely folks that
I don't have time to look at the map.
Right, they don't transition well because this is, as you said, it's a different game.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some objection there. Like there'll be an online player and like we'll be at a tournament and there'll be guys at a table and I'll be doing my normal like, hey, do you know Austria? Have you played with him before? And somebody that will lean over is like, ah, man, all I know is he's an online player. He's never played face-to-face
sure.
before.
Sure.
And you know that tells me a whole lot. I've played a lot with these guys. They're great guys and they're really good tacticians and they're good players, but it's a different game.
It is.
And
I'm not going to name a name, but I can remember like, somebody who was really like a great online player who was trying to make the transition to face to face, and the poor guy was so like he went to probably like four tournaments in a row when I was going to tournaments the most, and so I was at like four tournaments in a row with this guy and probably played on four or five boards with him during that time.
Yeah.
He was always like he had his like conference map with him all the time, and he was always like shaking. And would never make eye contact because he was staring too intently at the conference map trying to figure, like, because just the speed of it.
Yeah.
Like, and I think he gave up eventually, like, he kind of stopped going to tournaments just because he was like, I can't think that fast.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong, like, he's a super good guy, and he's, like, insanely good at online diplomacy. He's one of the best players I've ever known at online diplomacy. He just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And
he wasn't, right. You know, it's what I was saying before. He wasn't getting what he was satisfying for him out of it.
Yeah.
So he didn't play anymore. Which
makes
perfect sense. So does that answer your question, Mr. Cook? I hope so.
Yes, it answers my question, Nathan. Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah.
What else have we got?
One more.
One more?
One more, and then we're out of here.
Okay, good, good.
Pete Calvert.
Oh, Pete.
On the value of rogue units, and he asked us this once before, and we
actually talked a little bit about it in episode 39.
Oh,
the lost episode. Yeah.
If that's not true, we'll say it's true.
Until somebody finds the secret files stashed deep in the archives.
My computer right over here.
it's in a box. It's labeled top secret.
Al Capone's vault.
Yeah, exactly.
Geraldo is gonna find
so it. The value of a rogue unit. Does that we're talking about Flying Dutchman? Is that what we're talking about?
You tell me.
I assumed when he wrote us, he was talking about.
I thought he meant when you're France and you're down to one and it's in Warsaw.
Let's talk about both.
All right.
Let's talk about both.
All right. Now we're in trouble.
Value
of a rogue unit is if the tournament director doesn't catch it, like a Flying Dutchman.
Flying Dutchman,
if the tournament director doesn't figure it out, or nobody else figures it out, you have an extra piece.
I mean, I guess it's not
good.
Really that interesting of a topic if it is a rogue unit that is a Flying Dutchman, because the value is it's more pieces than you should have.
Yeah, that's actually always pretty good.
That's actually a good point. So
good.
I should have maybe thought a little bit more about this, because there is really only one.
Dutchman when you looked at the show notes.
Yeah, no, I was definitely thinking Dutchman.
Okay.
So, guys, if you can get a Flying Dutchman, that's good.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Everybody know what that means? We just find it in episode 3 or something.
Yeah, we did.
That means like...
go back and listen to it.
Put another piece on the board that you don't deserve.
Whether intentionally or unintentionally.
Good times. Yeah.
Eric's not bitter at all.
I've never done it. Maybe I should.
I think it's happened to you.
Yeah, it's probably happened to me. Maybe that's why I'm bitter.
I think that's why.
Other people think of putting Dutchman on the board. Also, just bald-faced lying about people coming and attacking me. Two things I've never thought of.
Because you just
probably
don't have,
should.
You don't have the chutzpah to do it.
I have plenty of chutzpah. I have lots of ways I like to cheat. That's just not two of them.
I'm a cheater.
I'm a cheater.
Come on, guys. Okay, so a rogue unit as in a pirate.
A pirate. Or what's the land equivalent? I mean, it's always better if they're fleets. We can agree on that, right?
Oh, clearly it's always better if they're fleets.
A, they screw stuff up more, and B, you get to talk like a pirate while you have
them. Yeah, and it's way more difficult to eliminate them.
Extremely high value in most cases.
Oh, there's nothing better than talking like a pirate. Yeah. It's super annoying.
Yeah.
To everyone. Everyone can do a pirate. It doesn't take anything special. Everyone can go, yarr.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can just wander around. And it's super entertaining to pretend you have a sword and talk silly to people.
Yeah.
You got one unit left.
And I'll be landed on Naples, lad. Yarr. So if you're down to one, be sure to keep the fleet if at all possible.
That should be a general rule.
I guess maybe the somebody had a barbarian or something when you just have like one army that's wandering.
Marauder?
Marauder, sure. They always just die though.
Yeah, that's a problem with them. They're really
just squirt out to wherever and ruin lives for longer.
Yes, I also think that it's typically a lot easier to convince someone that your fleet is useful as opposed to an army.
And it is.
It usually is.
Often. Thick as a convoy.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, we're answering Pete's question by saying the value of a rogue unit is that it should be a fleet.
All right. Leaving that part aside for a moment. And I would say that the slightly more serious answer to that is that it depends on who is piloting that one rogue unit and what they want to accomplish.
True.
Right? Like, if you're France and your last army is in Warsaw, like, it's fairly rare that army is going to make it back to Marseille and reconstitute France somehow, right? So, at that point, then it's just what he wants to do, right? And the value to you as not that French guy with the army in Warsaw, like you're the Austrian in this example, that's entirely dependent on your ability to figure out what it is that player wants. So the value to you could be very, very high because it could be a free army. It could be an army that does whatever you tell it to do, but you have to understand what it is that he's trying to accomplish at this point. Does he just want to have fun?
Yeah, that's not a very helpful guy.
Not a very helpful guy. Oh, yeah, I want to see if I can get to St. Petersburg. Fine, good, whatever.
We'll see you later.
I
will also say, implicit and sort of buried in what you're saying, if the person that has only one unit left is somebody that just... he's a good tactician and is really just into winning and wants to help you for whatever reason, just because he's a nice guy.
Revenge.
Revenge is a great one. Like, make sure that you really want that person out of the game before you get them out of the game. Even if they're just an okay tactician, having another set of eyes on something can be really helpful.
Yep.
So that is, rogue units can end up being pretty amazing. You give up one of your own units. Okay, yeah, I know. Just retreat back to Moscow. Take it, because I want you in the game. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a huge amount of value to that.
I have a hard time doing it sometimes, because sometimes I'm like, oh, but it's a dot.
Yeah.
Oh, but it's a guy. It's like a person.
Yeah.
Like, oh, which would I rather have, dot, person? And sometimes I'm like, dot, obviously dot. No, person.
This is why you're a sociopath, by the way.
It's not really, like... All right, fine. Moving on.
No, I think that's what he was talking about. To me, the biggest value of a rogue unit is the person piloting it.
Yeah, I would say whoever most correctly understands that person's remaining motivations can gain a huge advantage in a game of diplomacy. All you want to do is get back at Germany because he smashed you out of the game and now you're in Warsaw and not in your home country and he has all your home centers. All you want to do is get back at Germany. If you understand that and can use that to your advantage, that's massive because a free piece is pretty big.
Yeah, which is, it's almost as good as having a Dutchman.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly like having a Dutchman. If your agenda and that person's can't work well together, obviously, you know, like if you're Germany in that case, then you just want to like help whoever's going to eliminate them.
Right.
There are certainly, I mean, I would say there's almost never solos, and we did a whole episode on solos. I would say there's almost never solos without some kind of a dead but still on the board zombie power helping.
Yeah, you need the when you get into to like big power blocks don't end up in solos.
So you need
to have those little satellite countries, those little balkanized.
Absolutely. So when you're trying to win the game, the value is like you can't win the game without them.
Yeah.
So that's pretty high.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you don't want to running to eliminate players almost never helps you.
Right.
Unless you want to keep them small, controlled, and subjugated. But you want them. You definitely want to.
Now who's the sociopath? Jesus.
you want to keep them in your thrall? Enthrall. Just say they want to, you know, shackle them.
You are listening to Sociocast, the show about sociopaths, talking to sociopaths about sociopathing all the time.
So that was episode 40.
We're done.
It was pretty good.
We're, especially the production value on that, real, real good. Yeah. Good news is this is going to be up a lot faster.
That is true.
From when we're recording it, I'm just going to put it straight in the thing and
there it is!
Yay!
So in that vein, I do, it would really help us if you gave us feedback on what this sounds like and what your feeling is on the production value. Because if everyone comes back and says, you know, with the upgrade to your sound space, we don't really hear much difference.
Yeah.
We'll probably not break our backs trying to find another video editor.
Or, you know, audio.
But our last video editor was terrible.
Seriously, cut all the video out every single time.
It was just static.
Didn't matter what we told him. Yeah. I was like, but we have dancing girls in this one. Now it just...
Terrible.
God. Sorry you guys missed all the dancing girls from all the previous episodes.
And by video, obviously, I mean audio editor, pardon me.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear your feedback on it.
Yeah, for sure. But that's it. We're wrapping up.
That's 4-0.
The big 4-0.
Yeah.
We had a lot more stuff that we didn't even get to, but those were our favorite topics, so keep bringing them like that, and we'll keep doing them.
Bring them like that, and... Next episode, we're going to cover donkeys.
Are we?
Tree parts. And the other side of Russia. Siberia.
For Nathan Barnes, I'm Eric Mead. Thank you for listening to Diplomacy Cast.
And for Eric Mead, I am Bark.
Bark.